But I'll finish up here.
Like hell you will.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Melrose Place. Today's episode is Season 5, Episode 23, 101 Damnations. And now, here are your hosts.
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello. Before we begin, an announcement. Again with this episode 111, which will be dropping September 9th. We'll be watching Rob Estes and Emma Caulfield in silk stockings. It's season 4, episode 17, Champagne on Ice, available among other places on Peacock. Don't watch it. Just let us do it. But there's a link in the show notes.
Spoiler, there's two other people from the Starverse in that episode. We'll get into it. A note about Patreon content that has dropped, about which I forgot to tease ahead of the time. Our August edition of Again With Them dropped last Thursday, September 1st. Sorry not to have flagged it ahead. This is our monthly digest recap of Jenny and Tori's podcast, 90210 OMG, which is a perk for our Patreon supporters at the $5 level and up. And I'll just get ahead of the next one in case I forget. Just kidding. It's already in the doc. Our next one on September drops September 29th. You will get access to the nearly 2 years worth of archives when you kick up that pledge to $5 or more. Is it worth it? I mean, I think so. They're wilding on that podcast.
Yeah. It's almost as exciting as watching Magic Mountain on TV. And if you subscribe, you will know what that means.
It's true. This is also our first main podcast since the passing of Joe E. Tata. There will be, we are told, a special episode of 90210 OMG all about that. It probably in the spirit of the one they just did about Denise Dowse. But this is sad. I mean, he was old. It's not like it's a huge surprise, but he was in all 10 seasons of that show.
Yeah.
And
he was.
We gave him a lot of shit, but he was beloved. So we'll miss him.
He was. And, you have to give it up for somebody who was able to, portray convincing respect for Brandon Walsh.
Yeah.
What? So, you know, he didn't have an easy job. Let's say that.
It's true. Quick backup to patreon.com/againwiththis, which is where you can get all of our Patreon content. And one more update from our 2022 timeline. Back in July, we played a Starverse game, Sarah and Dave. Sarah was sadly not victorious, which meant she had to buy Dave a prize pack. Dave has already talked about this on our Discord, but do you want to report on your gift from Sarah?
I received a set of dominoes because apparently I'm an old man now. And also, though, I received a very 80s colored green on teal Steve Sanders 90210 t-shirt, which is quite excellent. And I gave the directive that it had to be Steve Sanders, and Steve Sanders I did receive. Thank you.
You are welcome. It was my pleasure. It is a beefy tee, very, very teal. And I hope that Dave will photograph himself wearing it with the sleeves rolled up, two hitches, as God intended.
All right, let us get into this episode, 101 Damnations, I believe was in that Starverse game, starting with our C-plot, Chelsea cramps Matt's style. Mrs. Fielding at her giant house has some views on Matt and his recent missteps in clip two.
I just don't think you're in any position to raise a teenager, Matt. I mean, you know, you did have an addiction problem just a few months back. You were also arrested for soliciting an undercover police officer.
Well, I admit I've been through some rough times, but I got help. It's in the past.
I am surprised that that's not where it stayed and that the writers remembered that. That's the only reason I called for that clip.
I appreciated the reminder that those things happened this season.
Yeah. 2 years ago.
Oh my God, oh, seriously. Yeah. But since we saw them last, Matt has decided he does want to take on guardianship of Chelsea. And around this point, Chelsea herself creeps into the doorway to eavesdrop on them arguing, not for the first time in the episode, by the way, before bursting in and announcing she will decide what is in her best interest, which in her opinion is not living with her old-ass grandmother in a house she calls like a sick shrine to her dead grandfather. She also refuses Matt's order that she apologize, in the process dismissing Mrs. Fielding's objection to Matt's guardianship on the grounds that he has sugar in his pants. That's a new one on me, but okay.
Same.
She doesn't want to live with Matt either. Her plan is to find her mother somewhere in Europe, apparently with no leads as to how to track her down. So Matt suggests splitting the difference and having Chelsea spend a few days with him, and she says she'll do it, but she won't make any promises. And then Matt gets home some number of days later to extremely loud music coming from his apartment into the courtyard and a reprimand from Amanda about subleasing his place to degenerates. So he explains, clip three.
I've got my 16-year-old niece living with me, all right? My late brother left her to me in his will. It's been kind of a rough adjustment for her.
She's not Mrs. Gambolini the parrot from Only Murders in the Building. She is not a chiffarobe.
No.
She is a person. She was not left to you. It is still...
No.
This whole plot is so boring. Please get yourself written off the show. Please. We want what's best for you, and that's it.
Yeah. Amanda, bless her, does not care about any of that and tells Matt to handle it. And Matt's like, it's just music. Why are you this mad? So she explains about her marital issues, which we will get to, but also already know about. And Matt empathizes, but then Amanda asks if Chelsea likes to play with matches. And they both race inside to find Matt's couch on fire from Chelsea leaving a lit cigarette unattended while she took a shower. Introductions are made. Clip four.
So are you hanging out with babes now, Uncle Matt? I didn't know you swung both ways.
Chelsea, this is Amanda Woodward, my landlord.
Oh. So what am I supposed to do? Kiss her feet and ask her for a break on the rent?
What is she, some kind of demon seed?
What are you, some kind of bitch?
Yeah, she is. So you should watch yourself. Also, she's not a good landlord because smoke alarms should have been going off. Hello?
Probably.
No, it's TV, but...
Yeah, good point. It's been a long time since we heard about those improvements she made to her own unit and then maybe to the others at some point in the unspecified future. Perhaps that was one of them.
I mean, given the amount of fires that have happened, like, okay, the Jane one was not in the complex, but it was around the corner and mm-hmm. someone tried to blow the complex up and
yep.
basically did, like, mm-hmm. smoke alarms. Get them.
Yeah. So Matt yells at Chelsea and apologizes to Amanda on both of their behalves. Amanda tells him to put a muzzle on Chelsea or they will both be out on the street. And when Chelsea tries to sass Amanda some more, Matt declares she's going back to Mrs. Fielding's house the next day, which, like, why not immediately? But some number of days later, Matt stops by his mother's to get the latest on Chelsea, which is she's not speaking to either of them. And Chelsea once again eavesdrops as Matt says Chelsea only started the fire to get his attention. And with his schedule, he doesn't have much to give her. The social worker jumped out, I guess. And he then adds that he thinks Mrs. Fielding should take custody. Well, unbeknownst to them both, Chelsea takes off down the hall. And of course, when Matt goes back to Chelsea's room to talk to her, it is empty. The window is open. Someone has written, adios, I hate you all, in the mirror in lipstick. It is unsigned, but if I had to guess, I would say probably Chelsea did it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or Chris.
Moving on to our B plot, Megan's life falls apart some more. When Michael gets to the practice, a literally entirely unseen receptionist tells him his wife has called several times and is also on hold at that very moment. And when he picks up in his office, he snittily asks Megan if she has been arrested again. She resets their plot line for new viewers and asks him how she can prove that she really loves him. He doesn't know. He has patience. She yips that she doesn't even know where he's staying, and he says she doesn't need to know, which, like, it's not a hotel. I know that for a fact, because no one ever does, but except Josh the Pimp. We'll talk about him in a second. When they have hung up, Megan answers a knock at her door. It is Ethel Tyler, who played one of the grandparents on The Cosby Show. Here she is Mrs. Bowen. She is Megan's landlord, and she very improbably read about Megan's address in the newspaper. Like, literally, what city editor would give a shit about covering this? Like, if Michael were the chief of staff at the hospital, maybe, because he would have some kind of status, but he's not, so who cares? Like, this is not news.
No.
Except in this universe, Mrs. Bowen is assuming all sorts of perversion went on in the house, which Megan denies and orders her to vacate within 24 hours. Definitely illegal. She leaves on a threat to incinerate anything still in the house after that. And the face that Kelly Rutherford makes in response is like Andrew Shue level wrong. You can see it in the visual aids. It's like she just looks kind of bemused.
Yeah. Or it reminded me of that famous sort of outro shot of Brenda scheming and snacking on the quad that went on for 10 days. That it was like, what? No? Like, wrong face and also cut.
Indeed. At the hospital, Michael reminds Peter about some waste disposal procedures that Peter was supposed to implement. And instead of being grateful that Michael wrote a memo about it for him, Peter snarks at Michael having time on his hands, given his issues with Megan. After leaving the door open for a possible reunion with Megan, Michael returns to his purpose, which is convincing Peter they're a good team administration-wise. Maybe Michael could even be co-chief of staff and spruce up his tarnished reputation, which, if his wife's solicitation arrest was already in the paper, all hope for that may be lost. But Peter laughs in Michael's face at the suggestion. And when Peter's gone, the nurse on the desk hands Michael a pile of messages from Mrs. Bowen, whose name Michael does not even know. The charge nurse handing them over has to say she is his present wife's landlady. Number four, isn't it? Which, like, I don't blame her. He deserves that. Yeah. Mrs. Bowen did not say why Michael has to get all his shit out of Megan's house, but the nurse is sure they'll be reading about it in tomorrow's paper. So Michael heads over to Megan's house, where a Hawthorne Courts for Lease sign is already up. And if the name Hawthorne, not Hawthorne, and the giant A in red in lease made you cock an eyebrow, yes, this is a gala committee placement. This is from the website. What does the scarlet letter have to do with commercials? In 1947, television officially became a commercial medium. One of the earliest was for Hawthorne Courts, a planned community in, Sarah, New Jersey. Mm-hmm. Our homage to this uncanny intersection begs the question, not what that phrase means, does the A stand for adultery or advertising? That's a thinker.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway. You can see that in the visual aids. When Michael enters, most of Megan's stuff is already gone. Mrs. Bowen seems to be presiding over the removal of the rest. For some reason, she does not tell Michael the whole story about why Megan doesn't live there anymore, when you would think this bitchy old bag would be dying to shit-talk Megan to her husband. But anyway, Megan boxed up Michael's stuff and left an envelope for him, which contains her checkbook, and ATM or credit cards, and a note. Clip five.
Dear Michael, guess I'm not good enough for anybody. Maybe.
This is also when he notices that she left her engagement ring as well, and he better start worrying that she's about to die by suicide, because I would be fucking yikes.
Yeah.
It's rough. At the beach house, Megan and Kimberly have a meeting of the Light Jeans Club, which you'd see in the visual aids.
Mm-hmm.
Kimberly starts badly by saying Megan looks terrible. She doesn't. She looks the same as usual. But she attributes her lack of beauty sleep to her incarceration and breakup, and then asks if Kimberly has ever noticed how many unhoused people live on the beach. Kimberly hasn't, because she hasn't gotten out much, and Megan figures she's been too busy ruining Megan's life. Kimberly offers her a shower and breakfast, but Megan doesn't trust Kimberly not to call Josh the pimp while Megan is out of the room. By the way, where is Josh the pimp? Because
thank you.
The end of the previous episode made it seem like he was going to be up her ass, as it were, trying to get her back on his, like, roster.
Yeah, and now that you don't have to pay Nick the Dick anymore.
Right.
What's the problem paying Josh the pimp?
Right. He's just gone. Like,
yeah.
It was so weird that he came back for that and then just peaced out. But he did. Anyway, Megan just wanted Kimberly to know she won, and Kimberly answers poorly. Clip six.
You're not gonna go back to your old life, are you?
What, did you think I'd go to law school or maybe take up the violin?
If you need some money, I can write you a check.
The one thing I know how to do is make money. I never meant to hurt you.
Maybe not.
But you take somebody who's been satisfied with bread and water and you give them champagne and caviar, you think it's easy to go back.
Will you keep in touch?
Yeah. All right. Every day.
What do the writers want from us? Seriously.
I don't know. Like, Kimberly's story is about to take a big twist backwards, but like, this scene was so pointless. Like, yeah. Megan should be focusing on what she's going to do next, not coming to Kimberly to yell at her.
Yeah. Like, if you didn't want guilt money, why'd you come here? Also, move these story strands away from each other already. Like, the one person in this scene can act, but is being given completely confusing lines with which to do that. And then the other one can't. It is being obliged to scream things. Like, she just saw a mouse in the kitchen. Like, yeah. This is no good. Move on.
Learn the violin! Enough of the dames. Back to Michael, trying to climb the ladder at the hospital. This time, by snitching to Dr. Shulman about Peter having been checked out for weeks. Clip 7.
Michael, I had no idea you disliked your new chief of staff as much as I do.
No, I don't dislike Peter. I mean, I just don't think he's the right man for the job. I mean, hell, even Peter didn't think so. Why else would he have written you a letter of recommendation on my behalf?
What letter? Peter never recommended you for the job. He just threw his hat into the ring.
Son of a gun, you see, you stabbed me in the back. Oh, that's great. See, even more reason that you and I should work together. Dr. Shulman, I deserve to be chief of staff.
Michael, I'm afraid that you misunderstood me. I may not like Peter. I may think that he's a self-centered pig. But that doesn't change the fact that you're not chief of staff material.
Whoa, and Peter is? Why is that?
Because Peter's smarter, better looking, and not married to a prostitute. Just be glad that you're working, Michael.
Yeah. You're not going to be chief of staff material until you deal with your hair situation.
Yeah.
It looks like one of those like helmets that people make for their cats from an orange peel in shape, except shoe polish.
It's true.
It's very bad. I don't know why they're doing this to him, but late 90s, sigh.
Mm-hmm. In terms of better looking, I mean, I know that's what you also think, but she should have just said taller.
Yeah.
Because, yeah. Anyway, I love that Michael thought that a letter from Peter would have any effect on anything. Like, I had totally forgotten about that entirely until this got brought up again. And so I'm glad she was like, it wouldn't have mattered, even if he did. But everyone's finding out everything as we barrel toward the finale, I guess. And then, the next day, we are at a down-market motel as Megan tries to return to her room without store-brand Jackie Earl Haley-ass manager spotting her. Unsuccessfully, as he follows her and demands his $50 for the room, she claims she will get it to him in a couple of days, and since he has figured out she is a sex worker again, he knows exactly how they can work it out and trade. Gross. Over to the practice, where now we actually see the receptionist from really far away. She tells Michael that Megan's calling, but, you know, the distance between them makes me think this is someone's niece or a contest winner, but I will be proven wrong. Stand by. Michael demands to know where Megan is, but as we see her grip the improbably grimy phone in her room, she tells him that she's nowhere and just wanted to make sure he got the stuff that she left him. And he tells her to come back so he can return it to her. And is midway through saying he feels differently about everything after having a few days to think about it, when Megan interrupts to say it is over between them. It was never real because of who she is. And Michael gently says their love is real, but she just says goodbye and hangs up. And then, clip 8.
I just got cut off. Can you get that line back for me?
Sure, just punch in *69. It automatically redials the number your wife was calling from.
Oh, the future really is now. Magic on the phone.
Nice.
And this is when we finally see this receptionist. Apparently her name is Ashley, according to IMDb. We see her full face. That and the sound of her voice make me wonder if she is Kelly Rutherford's sister. Like, she really sounds like her voice-wise. But the actor's name is Elizabeth Lowe. I can't find any link between them. I did look. So Michael, star 69s, gets straight through to the front desk at the motel where the manager is reading a book called Libidinal Economy. It is a Gallup placement. And they write on the website, "This postmodern art theory book by François Lyotard is required reading at CalArts, one of the two art colleges where this whole project began. Lyotard's book postulates that all systems of exchange are libidinal, pleasure-driven. Lyotard uses the prostitute-slash-pimp relationship to illustrate his broad notion of exchange and applies his theories to contemporary art practice. Speaking of the prostitute-slash-pimp relationship, when Michael visits a seedy hotel in search of Megan, his ex-prostitute wife, what do you think the night clerk is reading? Why, Libidinal Economy, of course. Shortly before this author's death, one of his teaching assistants learned of the Gala Committee's homage to the philosopher. He thought it was a riot and expressed his sincere," and that is where the sentence ends on the website. But based on context, sounds like he was flattered. Back to the show. Once the manager has identified the establishment by name and location, Michael hangs up. And when we see him next, he is marching into the front office where the book is still in full effect, asking for Megan. The guy does not have any Megan registered with either of her last names until Michael presents some cash and a physical description. And then the manager remembers Mary Smith in 102. But she's out. And since it's after 10, isn't that prime time for her kind, as he puts it? Yuck. And Michael grabs the guy by the collar and gets him to say she's probably working a piece of sidewalk a few blocks away. And look, I'm not going to come down to where Megan works, etc. But while other women are up and walking back and forth looking for clients, she is, and you can see this in the visual aids, just sitting on a wall, chewing
sitting
her lips.
On a berm, sulking. Yes. Yeah.
Arms crossed over her chest. The tiger print miniskirt is slightly suggestive. I'm pretty sure the modest black V-neck t-shirt is from J. Crew. Can look and tell me I'm right.
Yeah. I mean, so, like, all of the workers on this particular stroll, I had very similar outfits to go to work and not on casual Friday. Like,
it was a different time.
It was.
Another woman settles next to Megan, comments that she should get to the curb if she wants to make any money tonight. And I'm not saying anything about anything, but the tan and brown halter top she's wearing was previously spotted on Taylor McBride. And you can see in the visual aids, this lady wearing it and then a gif of Taylor in it from episode literally 18, like not long ago. Just then.
And it's not that, I mean, it's not that revealing.
No. Mean.
This is just like LA work wear. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. No, I mean, we didn't think anything of it when Taylor was wearing it to the restaurant or whatever.
Like, no,
just
we didn't.
Looks like a shirt. Anyway, that's when Michael pulls up to take Megan away. Megan continues being a martyr about the whole thing in clip 9.
I'm a prostitute, okay? I belong here.
We're both prostitutes. Practically everybody I know is a prostitute.
At least everybody on this street.
You butt out. Come on, Megan. You know, the truth is, we're as good as anybody. Better than most people think. So, wanna come on in or what?
Honey, if you won't go, I will. I'll mitz off, he's mine.
Mitz off. You never get me, Coppa. You never get me, see?
What a Donnybrook. Yeah, I like that the dialogue also refers to the theories in Libidinal Economy. So nicely done. And I'm whatever about Megan, but I'm not sorry to see this part of her storyline end. It was silly. When she's closed the car door behind her, Michael slides her ring back on her finger and clip 10.
Now, you didn't actually do anything, did
no,
you?
No, Michael. I didn't. I couldn't.
Oh, phew. I'm glad we established that going forward. Like,
arf.
Yes. Back to the old, that old saw about like every man wants a prostitute, but on her very first night, and so does Michael, I guess. Mm. I mean, it's not, mm-hmm. but kind of. Finally, we have our A plot. Sydney's somehow linked to everyone else that we haven't already talked about. And Amanda, who we have. Good grief. After Kyle kicked her ass out, Taylor did go to Peter's. He opened the door to her for whatever reason. Okay, dude.
Idiot.
She is in a dark blue or possibly purple version of the dark wine black lapel robe that was everywhere in the 90s, including on Joe, if I recall correctly.
Mm-hmm.
Peter was not prepared to have guests, somehow just made one cup of coffee in his regular-ass coffee maker, which he chivalrously offers to Taylor. His arm is still fucked up from getting his ass beat by Nick in the previous episode, so he asks her to help him with his suspenders, and thus is conveniently turned away as he asks where she's going to be living now. She makes a actually funny face. You can see in the visual aid, it's like, she thought with Peter for a while, and he's like, sure, look for your own place, though. She thought she was leaving one relationship for another, which you got kicked out of one relationship into parts unknown, last I checked.
Mm-hmm.
Peter also does not want to get into a discussion about this and leaves for the office, but first Taylor helps him on with his jacket and gives him a big morning and coffee breath kiss. Oh, lovely. Just what everyone wants.
Yeah. Although, I mean, that Peter is clearly hoping that Taylor McBride will take a hint is like,
yeah,
buddy, you deserve whatever happens now. Sorry.
Yeah. Did you give her keys? Because she's never leaving. Like, yeah, she is going to chain herself,
you will have to move.
Radiator.
Yeah. You will. Yes. You should start looking for a new place,
yes,
yourself.
True. Over at Jake and Allison's place, she has just found out she has an incompetent cervix, which is a real thing, can lead to premature birth or loss of an otherwise healthy pregnancy. So I think we all see where this plot complication is headed.
Never seen TV before. Please explain. Just kidding.
Well, stand by for the next episode. I think all will be revealed. She is annoyed about the male-dominated medical establishment and her doctor's orders that she basically go on bed rest for 2 weeks. Like, yeah, what a hardship. But she is also too immature to call her current boss to say she needs to take the time, instead calling Billy and making him do it.
That was funny. Sorry.
It's not bad. Make yeah, Billy useful somehow, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Over to Kyle's, where Taylor's on her shift, acting like nothing has changed, when Kyle comes out from the kitchen to kick her out. I honestly can't believe he lowers his voice even a little to do so in front of the other employees, but he does. And after a brief argument, Kyle yanks Taylor, how else, by the arm while promoting Tim to the host stand, ignoring Taylor's loud objections about it. She follows him into the kitchen, still barking at him, while Mario hilariously goggles his eyes at the whole situation. Oh, Mario, what have you gotten yourself into? Honestly.
There's so much boiling liquid and so many sharp knives, and Mario is just like, I need to get out of this scene right now.
Mm-hmm.
Poor guy.
Mm. When Mario's gone, the McBrides continue idiotically going back and forth about whether Taylor really still loves Kyle, while she admits she also loves Peter simultaneously, which, Peter does not love you, lady, so this choice would have been easy if it had not been taken out of your hands, but Kyle doesn't care about anything she has to say and kicks her out. Over to D&D, Billy relays Allison's message to an unsympathetic Amanda, who expects Allison not only to work from home, but also buy her own fax machine.
Like, I know, LOL.
Allison, getting in early on our thrilling 2020s dystopia. Craig enters just then, asking Amanda how it went with the divorce lawyer he set her up with. Obviously, Amanda does not want to discuss that off-screen conversation with him, but he arm grabs her drink before promising he's asking as a friend. And she says she would be better if he left her alone. Oh, God. Over to the store. Sam is justly I hate to say, critiquing a display involving a mannequin suspended from the ceiling that Sydney is incomprehensibly setting up in the middle of the sales floor instead of, I don't know, one of the store's two front windows. Anyway, you can see this from many angles in the visual aids. It will not make any sense to you the more you see of it. But Sydney has a concept. Every part of it is labeled like a Ben Garrison cartoon. Clip 11.
I am not trying to criticize your vision of the working woman climbing the corporate ladder.
And always slamming into the glass ceiling?
Hmm? Right. It's just this whole display is unstable. I mean, it's an accident waiting to happen. What if someone trips over the cases and then ends up suing us?
A, it's not unstable. And B, you're the only one who would trip over these cases. Everyone else is going to see that obviously they're part of the display and walk around them.
So, again, think we can all see where this is going. Sydney sends Sam to the back to do scut work. Enter Edie McClurg, actually iconic character actress. Here, she is a customer named Hilda Morris. She is looking for a jacket and isn't worried about Sydney's warning that the store is not size inclusive. Get on that, Sydney. And then, clip 12. That's Hilda tripping.
Oh my God. Oh, okay. All right. Are you okay?
Whoa. Oh! 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 Don't touch me!
It's, I mean, they recycled it and now it takes twice as long. Like, at least on 90210 with aerobics lady, this was done with in like 24 minutes.
Uh-huh.
No, not here.
Oh, Lord, no. But please go to the visual aids to see Edie McClurg just sailing into this display and really just not sparing any effort in the kicks, the falls. I mean, it's not her actually falling, I'm sure, but still, it's quite something. And Sydney does deserve everything that happens to her as a result, because this display is fucked up. The next day, Taylor rages up the stairs to her former residence to threaten to sue Kyle for changing the locks on the restaurant. He figures that is what Taylor would do, so he is ready to buy her out. And as Allison eavesdrops openly...
Oh my fucking God.
is standing fully in front of her window. Like, go around the
visible
corner.
Visible from head to toe.
Yes.
Open blinds, which she then... forces open even further, stares directly at them, and I think maybe mouthing along with what they're saying. This is not eavesdropping.
No.
Be better at this. You live in Melrose Place.
Yeah. This is openly just standing there spectating. And it is, as you can see in the visual aids, actually preposterous that neither of the McBrides is like, do you mind? I mean, they're having this fight loudly in the courtyard. Like, even if they couldn't see her, they should assume any open window is going to convey the whole thing. But still, she just has no chill. Anyway. Yeah,
her mouth is hanging open, Billy style. She's, like, wearing red. I mean, it's just really insane. I find it very relatable. But, like, just get to the side of the window and turn your ear to this extremely loud conversation that, because you are not hearing impaired, you do not have to watch their lips.
No, you don't. Jesus. You could also crouch down in front of the window so that, like, only the top of your head is visible if they happen to look over, which they probably won't because they're agitated. There are ways, we're saying. This is not necessary.
Like, if your window was already open, you really did not have to get up.
Oh,
they
no.
are yelling.
No. Anyway, Kyle yellingly offers Taylor $150,000 to get out of his life forever.
Oh, my
Taylor's
God.
Pretty sure. Honestly.
I will provide matching funds. Get out.
Taylor, however, is pretty sure Kyle doesn't have it, but he took out a second mortgage on the restaurant in Boston. She refuses his terms, so he grabs her arm, of course, to ask what's so special about Peter. And finally, Taylor tells him the truth about their original relationship and then almost immediately starts lying again. Clip 13.
Fate brought us together again, Kyle.
No. What's down there that brought you together?
You know what, Kyle? Every hour of every day that you and I were married, Peter was in my heart. He was always Peter.
Okay. So now that Allison has all this information, perhaps she can offer it to Amanda in exchange for actually getting off the 2 weeks her healthcare provider ordered her to take. She doesn't, but she should.
Agree.
So speaking of healthcare, Sydney, looking fab in red, you can see this in the visual aids, goes to visit Hilda in the hospital. She has brought a little basket of flowers, and Hilda cracks that if she had broken her neck in Macy's, Mr. Macy wouldn't do shit, and then clarifies she didn't literally break her neck, but she's in a neck brace. She's not doing great, she says. And she also calls herself a clumsy ox and blames herself for the accident. And Sydney's so relieved to hear her say that and couldn't agree more. And you can see in the visual aids, Hilda side-eyeing her like, no, I can say I'm a clumsy ox. I don't need you to agree with me, but, you know.
Yeah.
It's very funny. So Sydney goes straight from Hilda's room to Peter's office to ask to see Hilda's chart. Peter spits that that would be unethical, besides which he has no interest in doing Sydney a favor. So she decides to focus on the first part only, calling out his own ethical breaches of late. Clip 14.
All right, I want you out of this office. Now!
You don't feel at all guilty about your affair with Taylor, do you?
Guilt is a waste of time, Sydney.
You know, I only slept with Kyle that one time at the restaurant, and I felt horrible. You probably slept with Taylor like a million... I probably shouldn't have said what I just said. Oh, guess it doesn't really matter now that everybody's marriage is broken up.
Right. I mean, it's ancient history.
Yeah.
No more damage to be done.
Exactly.
That made me laugh, but...
Yes. I missed these two together, like, to the point where they were so funny. I was like, how are they so familiar? Oh, yeah, she used to work at the practice.
I mean, she embezzled a bunch of money, right?
Did
anything ever happen with that?
Mm-hmm. No.
Oh, okay.
Never came up.
Neat.
But you can see in the visual aids the moment where she realizes she has said too much while Peter just watches her like, interesting. It's really good. So Allison is crawling out of her skin by the time Jake gets home. He is curious about who is playing their music so loud, which we already know it is Chelsea. But Allison doesn't care about that because she's been dying to tell Jake the gossip that she overheard. I don't know how she didn't phone him at work immediately because I fucking
Seriously.
Would have.
But, yeah, I would have been holding the phone up so that he could hear while it was happening. Although he could just open a window at Shooters and probably have heard it, but look who's Mr. Anti-Gossip.
I know, yeah. So she asks whether he thinks she should tell Amanda. He doesn't, and orders her to quit eavesdropping and closes the window while she pouts because it's coming slowly, but controlling Jake. He's back in Jake form. The next day, we're in the kitchen at Kyle's, where a truly disgusting plated lobster gives way to Taylor, announcing she has no intention of letting him buy her out.
Nasty.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Because I am not a lobster haver, so I was really curious about, like, what? Shouldn't this be oranger and glossier? It looks so dry and plastic. I hope it is.
Yeah, me too. But the lobster wasn't even the problem. It was the revolting saucing that was just, like, glopped on there. It looked like salsa. From concentrate that had been sitting out for a while, and there was like a skin on it. It just looked really disgusting, but
yeah.
Good luck, Kyle's.
It's in the visual aids, obviously. So Taylor goes on saying this restaurant would not exist if not for her, which is actually true, to be fair, to her for once. And deciding to accept her claim that he can't bar her from the premises, Kyle says he doesn't want to see her face. So if she needs anything, she should send a waiter back to the kitchen on her behalf, and then immediately cuts his hand and furiously refuses her help. And in the ER, a bad acting doctor or nurse has just led Kyle to a bed when Peter comes in and gets rid of this guy. And he and Kyle snark back and forth before Peter shares his latest intel. Clip 15.
Well, aren't you full of righteous indignation? That sounds funny coming from a man who's sipped from the old adultery fountain himself. And more than once, mind you. Let's see, there was the waitress in Boston, and, then of course, I know that you slept with Sydney.
You slept with Sydney?
Oh. Yeah, I slept with Sydney. Once.
You sanctimonious hypocrite.
What the hell does that make you? How many times didn't you sleep with this bozo?
You go to hell.
I'll get that other guy to come in and finish you up, okay? I hope you have insurance. You know, he's a little green.
There's a moment after as Taylor is stomping out when Peter looks back at Kyle and does a shrug like, can you believe this shit? And it's so funny. It's in the visual aids.
I mean, this storyline is stupid, and I do not buy for a second that he would endanger anything with Amanda with her.
Yeah.
I also think that Kyle should just go back to Boston and, like, close the door to Massachusetts behind him on his way.
Yeah.
Leave Taylor, like, back here. It's fine. Mm-hmm. But what I really want is for Kyle and Dr. Peter Burns to, like, go on adventures. And, you know, this is what I always want. It's like, let's put these characters who supposedly hate each other but are hilarious together and have them solve crimes. Yay! Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It'd be better than this slog that we're in right now. But anyway, maybe Chris will give them a job at the halfway cafe / private investigation service.
Perhaps. That night, Sam stops by to check on a very bored Allison. This is the best shot that we get in this episode of the quilt that she has had on the couch this whole episode. And yes, it's another gala committee, a placement. And they write, Allison must work at home because of her difficult pregnancy. Like all women on network television, she has no choice. Even powerful female television characters like Roseanne or Murphy Brown can talk about getting an abortion, but can never choose to have one. Networks censor themselves so that they won't risk losing advertisers who fear right-wing Christian boycotts. To put speech about choice back into network television, we wrapped Allison for two whole episodes in this lovely homemade quilt whose pattern is the chemical structure of RU486, the abortion drug widely used in Europe, but until recently banned in the U.S. And there's a better shot of it in the second episode of these two episodes. But yes, it's very subtle, but I admire it.
It is a pretty rad quilt, actually. And if my mother were still living, I would totally get her one for her birthday or Mother's Day.
Yep.
She would think it was amazing.
Back to the episode. As Allison and Sam are chatting, they hear Kyle in the courtyard bellowing for Sydney. Obviously, Sam is interested while Allison pretends not to be, I guess, for the benefit of Jake, who is not present. But Sam, being cool for once, shushes Allison so that she can hear as Kyle confronts Sydney about what she accidentally told Peter and how it has since gotten back to Taylor. And he ultimately does not seem that mad about it and just asks her not to tell anyone else, like, who else even is there? But obviously, Allison then asks Sam to repeat what she just heard. And Sam is furious about Sydney, whom she already hated anyway, and says now that she knows Sydney and Kyle fucked in the restaurant, she's never going to eat there again, which, fair. That's a fair takeaway.
Yeah, I mean, someone fucked up that lobster, and so, you know, different routes to the same conclusion.
Indeed.
Good job, Sam.
Yep. When we see her next, she's at the store in some real frosty lavender eyeshadow you can see in the visual aids, lying in wait to tell Sydney some shit about being a two-faced hypocrite for A, sleeping with Kyle, and also B, criticizing Taylor for fooling around on him. And Sydney says Sam's information is inaccurate, but would also like to know where Sam got it. And before Sam can say, by hearing things with one of my five working senses, a woman comes in asking for Sydney. Sam underlines the gala placement in the B-plot by saying she's not the one with the scarlet A on her chest, but the woman's not interested in that because she's there to serve Sydney with Hilda's lawsuit. Obviously. And Sam's like, maybe next time I tell you a display is unstable, you'll listen. And I hope Hilda cleans your clock. Hey, Sam, fucking quit this job already. It is
seriously
months past time. Speaking of Sydney's former conquests, over to Kyle's, where Kyle deigns to come out and see Taylor at the bar. She has a non-negotiable contract, not a thing, for running the restaurant. When he won't look at it, she tells him her lawyer thinks he should reconsider given how he fucked Sydney. I'm paraphrasing. They're going to work on alternating days and split the profits down the middle. And this seems like a good division of labor, except take turns working three consecutive days at a time. What are you, stupid? Like, who wants to work Monday, Wednesday, Friday? Work your days in a block, duh. Why is this what I'm focusing on? Because this is boring. Instead of saying that or noting that he's the chef and Taylor just tells people where to sit, Kyle signs, letting Taylor know this isn't over. And at Shooters, Jake finds Amanda alone in a booth trying to order her fourth vodka martini.
He thinks
she's had enough and offers friendship instead. So she tells him the end of her marriage is all her fault for pushing Peter away and accusing him of having something going with Taylor when he had just gotten out of jail. So even though Jake totally judged Allison for gleaning this information by eavesdropping, he wonders if Amanda has ever considered that Taylor and Peter knew each other before Peter and Amanda got married. And when Amanda asks one follow-up question, he spills everything he heard. And that's when Craig shows up. So Amanda calls him Junior and orders him to drive her somewhere, which turns out to be Peter's house. Thank you, Amanda, for not driving four martinis in or three and a half. Craig ignores Amanda's demand that he stay in the car as she stomps up to confront Peter and anyone else who may be there. And based on how Peter and Taylor are dressed, they either just started or just finished fucking, I guess, or hope started, since Peter still has his shoes on, as you can see in the visual aids. And Amanda gets into it in clip 16.
So, were you having an affair with this tramp the entire time we were married?
My God, you're drunk.
Answer the question.
No. Not until you started bumping bodies with Richie Rich over here.
Hey, don't deflect this back on Amanda.
Yeah. You cheat.
Correction. You're the cheat here. I'm the betrayed husband.
You know, Amanda, even if Peter had cheated way back when with me, it would have been justified, since you never loved him. All you ever did was criticize him. You are such a bitch.
Hey, Amanda, come on. You're making a fool out of yourself. Go sober your girlfriend up.
You know what? I may be drunk, but I am not too drunk to remember all our conversations. Now, how many times did I ask you if there was anything you hadn't told me about Taylor? And how many times did you say no? Nothing to tell. I guess it must have slipped your mind that Taylor was your dead wife's sister.
You're kidding.
Can't cut your tongue.
Not that it makes any difference. But the truth is, I didn't even recognize Taylor at the beginning. It was a coincidence she even moved into the building.
A coincidence? She moved into your building. She showed up at your trial, became your patient. She even vacationed at your honeymoon hotel. What are the odds? You know what? You two deserve each other. I hope you're very miserable together.
I mean, that Peter is staying with Taylor now that all of this is evident. Like, he has known this for weeks, I guess, but like, it's just really hard to stomach.
Yeah. And
good
at
drunk
least
acting by Heather Locklear, though, as always. I love her.
Agree. Yeah. I mean, I think Peter like doesn't really want to be with Taylor. That's what the conversation up top was, where it's like, you can crash here for a little while, but you should move out. But then at the same time, it's like, guy, if you don't want her getting attached, stop fucking her. I'm just saying.
Especially since the whole, like, I can't resist you, I'm in lust with you. Like, ugh. I don't believe you because you look like she smells like farts.
But now Peter has questions, and why wouldn't he? Clip 17.
Tell me it was a coincidence.
I can't lie to you. I did read about your case in the Boston paper, and I took the next flight out, and I came down to see you at the jail.
So this whole thing was a setup, and I just walked right into it.
Peter, I love you.
Oh, stay away from me.
Yeah, hang on to that energy, buddy, because you're going to need it.
And she's not right.
No. She's real fucked up. And you are very easy to manipulate, apparently. And that's where we leave things for this week. Let us close up by naming our episode MVP. Sam? She was right about that display from top to bottom, honestly.
I mean, I would say Mario, but I feel like he is responsible for that revolting sauce. So
that's true.
I'm going to say Amanda.
Yeah, fair.
Gets lit up and speaks truth to power, and she looked great. So
yes, sure. Is continuing to call Craig Jr. at intervals, mm-hmm. which I also appreciate. Least valuable player. Jake?
Yeah.
You can't have it both ways on eavesdropping, man. Like, gossip is gossip. Respect it.
Yeah. Dishonorable mention to Kyle for all the arm grabbing. And yeah. for being a dole to be like, I don't want it to get around that I fucked Sydney. Like, why not? I'd be telling everybody, moron.
Seriously. And that's it.
Next time on Again With This, Kimberly continues to be a head case. Samantha's backstory continues to be a giant snooze despite a major revision. Jake continues to be a paternalistic shit sack, and Allison Jr. may not continue to be in a question mark. We will continue to be aghast at 90s hairstyles and fashions in our visual aids, which you can find for this and every episode of Again With This at againwiththispodcast.com. You can also follow us on Twitter at AWT90210. You can join the Patreon fun at patreon.com/againwiththis. And you can call or text us at 210-920-4699. That's 210-920-HO99. You up us anytime. I'm some kind of bitch, Sarity Bunting, and I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My co-host is recycled small claim subplot Tara Ariano, and she's on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And our producer, David T. Cole, is very miserable. Talk to you next time. Ooh.